This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Hello, I'm Amy Rojic, founder of BDO Center for Corporate Governance, and I will be hosting today's episode of our BDO in the Boardroom podcast series. And I'm very pleased to be joined by Ralph Ward as we take on the why and how boards today appear to be taking on more agency in order to drive corporate resilience. But first, a bit about my guest. Ralph Ward is an internationally recognized speaker, writer, and advisor on the role of boards of directors, how benchmark boards can excel, personal boardroom careers, and the future of governance. He speaks on board topics and offers boardroom masterclass programs. Ralph is also the publisher of the online newsletter Boardroom Insider, the worldwide source for practical firsthand advice on better boards and directors. He also edits the Corporate Board Magazine, the nation's leading corporate governance journal. And he is the author of 6 acclaimed books for today's corporate board, with his most recent coming this summer, Hacking the Boardroom. Ralph, I'm very happy to welcome you to our podcast today.
Thank you, Amy. I've been looking forward to it.
All right. Well, first, maybe Ralph, if you could tell our audience a little bit about your experience in corporate governance and what appeals to you most about being a governance nerd like myself.
There are a few of us governance nerds out there, so we need to stick together. But I started editing the Corporate Board magazine 35 years ago now here, still am. And it's sort of a case where you find, yes, this is where I belong. I think this is interesting. And I've developed it since then, launching my own newsletter at the end of the millennium and doing 6 books. And as I said, I have my 7th book coming out this summer. I do quite a bit of speaking and training around the world with groups on boardroom topics. To me, it's fascinating because what I try to share on it is something that most groups, organizations, business schools, the larger agencies and consultancies aren't really covering on corporate boards and governance. There is a lot of good intelligence and thought leadership out there on the big 30,000-foot topics, ESG, stakeholders versus shareholder issues, all of the big legalities and big thought topics on corporate governance. But no one has really been putting together, accumulating the what I call boardsmanship issues. Because if you think of it, a board of directors is a very unnatural organization to actually do anything in a hands-on manner. And that's what we expect of boards nowadays. They have a much more tactical role in the organization, in the company nowadays, on disclosures, on review, on signing off on compensation matters, very important things with a lot of legal consequences. And the board of directors was never set up to do anything like that. It's always been sort of a traditional boys down at the lodge thing, but now they're a working body. And no one has really accumulated how do you take a group of intelligent, well-meaning, but part-time amateurs, bring them together every few months and manage to get all of this workflow done. So it's a matter of just accumulating the folk wisdom and who's doing what that works to make board work even survivable nowadays.
Well, and to be clear, when you say the word amateur, I mean, these are all seasoned, experienced operators and C-suite level executives primarily. So I think the term amateur may be more around how to lead a company without being deep in the weeds, or maybe you would describe it differently?
No, exactly. The term amateur has gotten over the decades sort of a negative connotation, but this is amateur in the best sense, independent outside directors. Think of the people who are on the board of directors, particularly at large public companies. They are chief executives, they are CFOs, they are legal people. These are heavily responsible people with what I call their day jobs. And now they have to pull away from that for a few hours to bury their head and serving as an independent director on a completely different enterprise. And that is the literal term of an amateur. That is not what they're doing as part of their day job, but somehow they have to pull away and manage to dig into that and be responsible caretakers for it. Very difficult. Sometimes it's almost impossible.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I absolutely agree. So I guess given what we know right now, as we think of the environments boards of today are operating in, the uncertainty, economic pressures, continual disruption, whether due to technology, new ways of conducting business, supply chain issues, significant turnover in leadership and other talent issues, and a seeming deluge of information coming at the board and executive management, how are boards thinking about agency? That is the relationship between the principal, which is the board, and the agent, which is the C-suite, and specifically the CEO, to lessen potential conflicts of interest and ensure alignment between agent actions with principal interests.
I think you've touched on something that's really important, and it's a growing issue for boards and governance here. The board has always been this sort of great, important organization in the corporate structure. Everyone knows that. Everyone on staff gets nervous because the board is meeting this week. Everyone get ready. Everyone look busy. Everyone clean up and everything. But the board really hasn't had its own agency in any sense here. These are people who are coming in, as I said, part-timers. Who represents the board of directors when the board isn't in session, when it isn't convened? They're out there diffused around the world doing whatever they're doing with their day jobs. Who looks out for their interests? And when they get together, how do they view themselves as having agency? We are a body within this organization that has to be able to make some decisions and take responsibility. I see boards moving toward that sort of change in mindset. Maybe not willingly, but of necessity. We have to be responsible. We have to be the public face of the company. We have to sign a lot more disclosures now. We have to stand behind what we do. We have to come up with a compensation philosophy. We have to essentially represent the company on an outside in a way the board's never had to before. And that's forcing them into their own sense of agency, of being an independent body that's able to look over management, to make these long-term plans. It's a difficult evolution. It's something that they're not really getting the guidance they need on, but they're evolving that way out of necessity. They have to, because their names are on more and more papers nowadays, and they're going to be the ones who have to testify in litigation when things go wrong.
Exactly. And I think it's probably a little bit different depending on the jurisdictions you're in, right, Ralph? Because you look at this from a global and international basis, and I think it's very important for individuals to understand the legality, the litigious nature of being perhaps a U.S. public company board member versus another jurisdiction is probably higher. Would you agree?
I would agree, but I think it's less a matter of the standards that they have to meet than who's enforcing it. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., we certainly have the SEC, the Department of Justice, Delaware courts, all of that. But mostly it comes from shareholder and investor litigation. They're always out there nipping at your heels, ready to sue someone. Overseas, especially in Europe, it's probably more regulatory enforcement and codes of conduct for the business, no matter what jurisdiction you're in.
No, very fair assessment. All right. So let's see. In your mind, what should corporate resilience look like to a board of directors? And that is, how specifically should the board be approaching resilience in terms of how they are conducting their governance oversight responsibilities?
Here's the important part here, because the board of directors in any enterprise is the only entity that really has a long-term strategic interest in the corporation that's built into their chartering documents, the history of litigation around the world here. Management is looking at quarter by quarter results. They have to deal with things that are popping up. And certainly in the last few months in the U.S., change has been popping up daily. But the board of directors has to take that long-term perspective. what is good for the enterprise 2, 3, 5 years down the road? Do we have the resilience we need? And that ties into all sorts of things here. Succession planning for talent and for leadership, is the board monitoring that? Are they making sure that that's in case here? What sort of compensation incentives are we building in for the employees and for the management team? That's a risk factor, and risk is another aspect of that here. The entity, the board of directors, has to be aware of short-term risk, but they also have to be looking at, do we have controls in a system? We're looking at long-term risk and the things that are going to surprise us. We've both been in this field for a number of years, Amy, and you probably saw this too. 10, 15 years ago, risk management and risk oversight and the boardroom agenda was buried and it was tucked away as a sort of, yeah, we're doing a good job of risk. Okay, very good, carry on thing. Then you started having the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. You had COVID. Suddenly, the boards have to be a lot more concerned about risk. What's going to pop up? What aren't we looking at? And that's another matter that they've had to deal with. All of it ties into the resilience factor. Are we ready? Can we deal with this?
Yes, and I certainly lived through the early 2000s and, you know, the onslaught of Sarbanes-Oxley. So yes, I absolutely agree with those thoughts, Ralph. So one of the things that I think you and I had spoken about in thinking about this episode today was really thinking specifically about the ways in which a board has traditionally conducted its work. And I'm referring to board meetings and agendas, information provided in advance of meetings, the sourcing of information, continual education, engagement with stakeholders, access to additional resources, and communications within the boardroom setting. So where do you see opportunities for boards to improve in their execution, given all of those items?
This is the fun part. This is the really gee whizzy aspect of governance that's coming on for boards now, because I mentioned this earlier, but if you look at it, what we expect of the board of directors, especially of a public company, but even for private venture-backed firms nowadays, is to do an almost impossible job. The amount of information they have to review and look at and sign off on has grown exponentially over the last 10, 15 years here. Meetings have gotten a lot longer. There are more of them. How do you do that with, as I mentioned, a group of part-time amateurs? It's become an impossible job. So you have to completely rip apart, how does the board work? How does it adapt information for its needs? Technology is one of the first things that I'm seeing. Use of board portals, online board meeting tools to boil down the board book. You've seen this as well as I have, the way board books, pre-meeting information packages have ballooned over the last decade. Everyone wants to be able to say the board saw this, and that's something that's becoming a real hazard for the board of directors. You get 100, 200 pages of information a few days before a board or committee meeting. You can't absorb that. You can't really make sense of it. So you need modern tools to boil that down here. Use of graphic dashboard reporting to give the board of directors information. Yes, this number, this revenue figure, this issue is in compliance. It's green light, yellow light, it's getting borderline, red light, we've gotten out of compliance. It can take 100 pages of information, boil it down into 10 charts. They get an immediate read on something that's out of compliance, and then they can dig in deeper if they need to for that. So taking that information, use of online board meeting technology. When COVID hit 5 years ago here, boards were using online meeting portals and technology, but on a fairly limited basis. More of what I saw was at committee meeting level. And suddenly everyone was locked down. So you had to suddenly become expert on online board meetings. And people have really upped their game on that over the last 5 years. They've found out also that a lot of things that you thought, well, we have to have the board together in person to make this decision or review that or issue? No, you don't have to. You found ways that you can do it online and make it effective. And boards have developed all of the new protocols for ways of handling board meetings online, how to get attention, how to assure you have a quorum, assure that votes are being done well. And it's saving a lot of time and effort. Think about the quality and level of the people on your board, extremely important, busy people. When you have to get them together in a room every few months at company headquarters, that's a huge opportunity cost. If you can break that down into a number of smaller online meetings, board meetings sort of go the way of the rule for computer processing. Suddenly, the cost required for it drops through the floor by 90%. You can have more and shorter board meetings online, do a lot more, keep fresher information that way. And one thing I'm seeing popping up is the use of AI tools for this. I mentioned taking that 200-page board book and boiling it down into some charts. Think about what AI tools could do by going through, reviewing that, and coming up with a briefer board briefing on it, a few pages. This is what you want to look at. This is something that's changed. We found some information online that supplements this. You might want to know about that. AI tools are going to be the next hot thing I see in helping board members prepare and deal with meetings. But that's going to have a lot of implications that need to be worked out. Is it really finding the matter that's important? If you have two different AI platforms looking at the same information and coming up with differing menus of what's the most important, which of those two are correct and which isn't? So it's a coming thing, but there's going to have to be a lot of sorting through procedures to make it work for the board.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with that, because I've seen instances where, you know, board members are trying to get themselves up to speed from an industry perspective, from understanding better the risks impacting that industry that are known, as well as the disruptors that are yet unknown that could have a significant impact on the business. So I think there remains to be a lot of caution. And I think this is one of those arguments where you still do need human judgment and skepticism to see and review the information you're getting, because you certainly don't want a board member that raises an issue that really probably has nothing to do with the industry you're in and go down a rabbit hole in that respect. And, you know, in essence, be somewhat wasteful of the time being spent away from other critical issues that the company is encountering currently. So, you know, I do think there remains risks there, but I agree with you. I think boards need to be exploring ways to be more efficient and effective in their roles. And certainly AI can do that. And again, to echo your words, with proper guardrails so that they're not, you know, in error leaking company information outside as they're doing their research and working within, you know, very strict protocols on how that works. But I think the education of boards in that regard is incredibly important. And the boards that we're interacting with are really leaned into how technology could be helpful to them and wanting to understand more. So I appreciate those comments. I think one of your other comments about, you know, meeting online and so forth. Yes, I think that's a very efficient way and effective way to do work. But I think there's also things that I just want to highlight that weren't said, that when you have, you know, a culture on a board that may not be ideal, I don't believe that necessarily not meeting in person helps that instance. Or for example, when you have new board members that you're trying to onboard, introduce to the group, I think there are situations that really require in-person, you know, meetings and so forth. But again, I think that's different for every organization. I think there's certainly times, I mean, we look at it at our firm kind of from a flexible nature. You identify those critical areas where you really need in-person interaction and engagement. Some of that may be for board members to have the opportunity to see management, different levels of management, you know, in operation, if you will, or in front of the board presenting. And you don't necessarily always get that from an online meeting. So I would throw some caution in that statement, but I agree with your thoughts.
And you raised a great point here, Amy, because one of the other things that I'm seeing more attention to is orientation of new board members. And that's where the human factor really comes in here, because traditionally we have this idea that the board members were all chums that all went to the same country club and know each other out there. And most of the time, board members really don't know that much. They don't personally interact with each other. The independent board members don't. And if you add someone to that equation here from the outside, who might be an independent, who they might sort of know, traditionally orientation for new board members was, here's a big pile of information to look at, here's a couple of people to call, see you at the first board meeting. And that just doesn't really work anymore. You need to get people visiting, talking with people, becoming familiar with management, becoming familiar with other members of the board to be effective. And that, again, requires the human touch.
I agree. And where I've seen that work best is when either the chair of the board or a chair of the committee of the boards that you've been assigned to really takes that on as, you know, the guide, if you will. And oftentimes it might be setting you up with another member of the board that can kind of show you the ropes, you know, forgive my phrasing, but, you know, that you have to bounce questions off of. And I know we did a series at the outset of this podcast series that looked at, you know, onboarding, what directors appreciated when they were new to their board roles. And I remember one very specifically, someone was very appreciative of just knowing where to sit in the boardroom and not sitting in someone else's seat, if that was like the protocol.
That's one of my favorite things that people never think about until the board meeting. But it's like going to church. You don't want to sit in the family pew of someone else who's been there for years, and it can be a real faux pas.
Yeah, exactly. The boardroom faux pas is the great term. But, well, we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that maybe remains top of mind for you in terms of where you may see a further need for the board to better align themselves with management in order to contribute to the longer term sustainability of the organization that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, more use of interplay between board members and members of staff here. The old traditional sort of straight line military approach to structure was, if you're on the board, you probably shouldn't be talking with members of the management team outside of the CEO. If you did, it was only with the permission of the chief executive. It was a very much line command and control approach. And that's melting down more. I'm seeing more concern for giving people interplay, the ability to talk to members of management to check on something. And it goes just beyond the essentials, like the head of the audit committee being able to call up the CFO just before the meeting and asking about a number or something here. More interplay, more interaction between management and members of the board, I think, is the way going forward. This also ties into what you mentioned earlier here, more agency. The board having its own self-identity. We need to do this job, and to do it well, we need more resources of information internally, but also externally here. Boards should be doing a better job of vetting all of the information out there on the internet, from investors, from analysts on the company, and being able to bring that outside perspective. The board is unique in management of a structure. They're insider outsiders. They're the ultimate insiders because they are the board of directors and fiduciaries, but they also come from the outside, and they're able to bring that objectivity. And they're the only people in the organization who can ask anybody, you're telling us this in the board meeting, but everything I'm seeing online says something different. How do you respond to that? And they can expect to get answers.
Yeah, that very well said. And I think if you think about the bigger picture here to your comments, you want to work with a management team that embraces that, because that, I think, builds the trust and the confidence between, you know, the independent members of the board and the management team. If the board's given free access and, you know, understanding that the board's not going to necessarily abuse that privilege, they're not going to be going out and talking to everyone all day and being disruptive, but, you know, where they need to familiarize themselves with part of the operations, or to your point, where they see conflicting information and they need to get more information from other sources to make a determination. I think that's very well suited. So, Ralph, I really appreciate all of your thoughts shared today, and I hope you'll consider coming back for future episodes, but just wanted to give you the last word here.
Excellent. And I've enjoyed, as I said, we're both governance geeks. I learn as much from talking to you as you've learned from talking with me today.
All right. Well, thank you again. And thanks for those who've listened in, and stay tuned for more BDO in the Boardroom.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.